We're holding the second chapter of Masechet Rosh Hashanah. So we just discussed that the witnesses have to go, even at the expense of Shabbos, to go and testify about the new month. The Mishnah tells us, if the courts don't know this guy, so we send someone else with him to testify that he's a trustworthy person. Shmendrick's going to show up at Bezdin. Bezdin's going to say, who are you? We never heard of this name.
Which is usually the case, right?
What?
Which is usually the case.
No, it seems like it wasn't usually the case. It would seem like ordinarily they had people on the lookouts. And you think Bezdin were responsible people. They knew when the new moon is coming. They probably had people out there looking and waiting, if not the Bezdin themselves.
I'm talking about knowing the guy, not talking about whether...
Right, but I'm saying, so if you or I happen to go, they don't know us yet. But look, if we're one of those people who like to travel and seek Dolim, chances are we're doing this every month, and after a few months, they'll know us. So it seems like there were set people who came, and then there were times that there weren't the set people. So he sent someone else with him to testify that he's trustworthy. The Bezdin of that city would send a messenger along with him to testify, believe him. Originally, they accepted testimony about the new moon from anyone who came, because that's the rule in Am Yisrael. There's a cheskas kashrus. You meet a Jew, you can assume he keeps Torah and mitzvos. That's the assumption. But when the kutim started ruining things, they started hiring false witnesses and coming and telling Bezdin a lie, trying to get us to mess up our calendar. Hitkinu, our sages instituted Shaluyum Kablim Elamina Makarim, that they would not accept testimony from anyone other than those that they know because of what had happened. Lavdavka Kvuim, not necessarily set people, but people that they knew. Maybe they were set, maybe they weren't set. One way to get them to know you is to be a set person. We don't have here a Gemara, right? There's a fascinating Tosefta here.
Should I read?
We don't have time. Let's continue, Yosef. Thursday night, remind me, we'll learn a Tosefta here.
What about the cooking? Could you give
it? Not now, Thursday night.
False witnesses to,
You had the Baitusim, and the Baitusim always wanted Pesach to fall out on Shabbos, because that's the way they learned the Psukim. And they didn't have control of the Beit HaMikdash. We had control of the Beit HaMikdash for most of the time. So they tried to get the Bezdin to work with their math. So let's say Rosh Chodesh Adar, the 30th of Adar, could have fallen out. Lamed Adar was Shabbos. And the question was there a new moon on Lamed Adar? Would that be Rosh Chodesh? Or is it going to be Lamed and the new month is going to be Aleph? So they desperately wanted Lamed to be Shabbos, because then it would turn out that Pesach is on Sunday. We all count Sefiras Omer the same way. And in the Beit HaMikdash, we bring the Korban Omer on Sunday the way they thought we should bring it. They thought Mimochat HaShabbat means Sunday morning. So if Pesach falls out on Shabbos, then we perform the Omer the way they want it. So this was a year where Lamed Adar fell out on Shabbos, and there was no new moon, but they wanted Bezdin to make it a Rosh Chodesh, so they hired false witnesses, and then Bezdin caught on, and ever since then, the institute, we only accept from people that we know who they are. Now, in the Tosefta, there's a fascinating story about how it happened. Mishnah Bet, Farishuna Yumasin Masuot. Originally, when Bezdin would make a new month, so they didn't have to send out messengers like we learned earlier, that they'd send out messengers to the Gola. But originally what they do is, they take people who went to the rooftop, and they'd raise these torches. We'll see in a second. Mishikirkilu HaKutim, when the Kutim destroyed this, they ruined this process, itkin shiyushluchin yotzin. They instituted that they'd send personal messengers from the Betin to the Gola, which obviously takes much more time. Ketzad yumasin masuot. How did they raise these torches? Mevin klunzot. They bring long sticks, sheleres of cedar tree, which was a very long tree, arukin, they were very long, vikanim, and reeds that light easily, vatzei shemin, and sticks of wood. So this is all things that are very flammable. Shemen is oil. Okay, I'd say shemen, I assume, means oil wood. But maybe it means sticks
oil.
Of...
I think more logically it would be oil. Dry olive branches.
Dry olive branches,
they're
maybe.
They're very good with the fire.
That's what they use in the matzah factories. I don't know.
From Greece, they're the best.
Ve'noret shel pishtan, and ne'oret are the sivim. They're the part that you take out when you comb the wool. So the flax, so you take out the impurities, the little pieces. Sure. So those little pieces that you take out of the pishtan, they light very easily. They light like that. Like you just put it near the flame and the flame jumps and lights them. They're thin strands that are within the flax, within the within the pishtan. So they'd bring that v'korech b'mshicha, and you wrap it all up. The ole l'rosh ahar, and they'd go to the top of a mountain. Umatzit v'enetzaur, and he'd light them in the fire. Now the people in the next town, they knew it was the lamed of the month. They wanted to know that night, did Bez Din get a testimony or not? So he goes to the mountaintop and lights the fire. Umalichu mevi, and he goes back and forth. Umale umorid, and goes up and down, back and forth and up and down. That's the sign. Ad shuret chavrosh usechen brosh ha'ar ha'shini, till he sees his friend doing the same thing in the next mountaintop. V'chen brosh ha'ar ha'shishi, and then the third mountain. Umayin ayu masin masuot, says the Mishnah Dalid, and from where did they light? What was the order? Mehar ha'mishcha, from the mountain of olives, that's Har Azesim near Yerushalayim, that was near the Sanhedrin, l'saltiva, to a place called Sartiva. And from Sartiva, the Mishnah says, umisaltiva legrufina, to the mountaintop called Grufina. Umi Grufina lechavran, umi chavran nebet biltin, umi bet biltin. Bet biltin was the last stop in Israel. Lozaz mi'isham, they wouldn't leave the mountaintop of bet biltin. El amolich umevi umale umorid, he'd do front and back and up and down, ad shuroe kol ha'gola lefanav kimdurat esh. Till in Gola, whoever caught on would run to his rooftop, start waving his torch, and from Bet Biltin, he would stand there and watch until he saw all of Bavel look like it was filled with light. That one after another, they'd light their torches and go to their rooftops. Now, the Gemara says, if we wouldn't have the Kutim, if we finish with the Kutim, we'd do this again. We'd start this whole procedure again. So when I was in Rabbi Feinstein's shir, I asked him, how do the Gemara know that? How did the Gemara know? Maybe they stopped this and it's never coming back. So he told me the Gemara knew it because Rebbe included this in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, this is how they did it. What do I care what the order was? It's a fascinating story. It's good to tell your kids. But what difference does it make?
Right, nowadays, what the order was.
So today we could use a phone. But for the last three millennia, we've been learning this Mishnah. And the Mishnah says it's no longer relevant. So he said, the Gemara says, why'd the Mishnah have to tell me the order? The Mishnah had to tell me the order because if we'd only be able to get rid of the Kutim, then we'd go back to this procedure.
Even nowadays?
I don't know nowadays. You're right. Today we have telephones. Probably not.
Would it be kosher to use the phone?
So that's a good question. That's, in general, a discussion. Do we accept testimony over the phone? How well do we use the phone? Yeah, okay. Mishnah Hei. You guys with me? Mishnah Hei. Chatzer Gdola Haita B'Yerushalayim. There was a big courtyard in Jerusalem. Uvet Ya'azek Haita Nikret. And it was called Bet Ya'azek. That was the name of this courtyard. Ulesham Kol Haidim Mitkansim. And all the witnesses would come there. So everyone's gathering to that courtyard. Whoever has testimony, wherever they are, they're traveling to Bet Ya'azek. Uvetin Botkin Tansham. And over there, Betin would interview them. Usudot Gdolot Usin Lem Sham. They'd make a big Kiddush. You come, you travel all the way there, you'd get a good meal. So they made them good meals. They had a good smorgasbord there. Because this encouraged people to come. You know why they make smorgasbord at the beginning of the wedding? They want you to show up on time.
Before the
wedding, they have those little nash. They want you to show up for that. So they make it yummy. So Betin knew the same thing. You want people to come, you could tell them it's important. Or you could give them good food. I know that when I give good food, my Thursday night class, suddenly the class is full.
Bachol
Meir would be there. Now, initially, if they walked in on Shabbos, so we have a rule. Within your city, the whole city, within a city, the whole city is called like Dalet Amos. It's like walking 4 footsteps. It's all considered your domain. Outside the city, you can travel 2,000 Amos, 2,000 footsteps. Once you went beyond the 2,000 footsteps, you're not allowed to travel. If a person, let's say, robbers took him, and the bandits came in on Shabbos, God forbid, they took him, and they take him, and finally they come to their camp, and Shabbos, they put him down in their camp, and they say, now you're here with us. You can walk around. He's not allowed to walk. The halach is, once he's out of his 2,000 Amos, he's not allowed to walk other than his own domain. Meaning within his Dalet Amos he could move. He can't move more than that. So let's say these Dalet Amos is my area. That's considered me. Literally Dalet Amos. Can't go anywhere. He digs himself a pit if he has to go to the bathroom. That's it. It's unclear whether he has 4 Amos in each direction or 2 in each direction. But bottom line, that's all he has. He can't move from there. That's the halacha. Now, these witnesses, Chazal said, even though it's Shabbos, we know the Torah wants you to come, you guys come, even if you're outside 2,000 amos. So they come. Now they gave their testimony. They're in Beit Yazik. So we tell them, tough luck, you can't move. Barishona originally. So our Mishnah says like this, Barishona originally, lo ayu zazin misham kol hayom. They wouldn't go anywhere all day. All day they'd have to be there in that courtyard. Itkin Rabban Gamliel Azakein, Rabban Gamliel the elder, we know that there were a few Rabban Gamliels, right? Hillel, who lived 100 years before the destruction of the temple. Shimon, his son. Gamliel, his son, which is Rabban Gamliel Azakein, he's Hillel's grandson. Hillel, Shimon, Gamliel. We have a few Rabban Gamliels. The fifth generation from Hillel is Rabban Gamliel, the younger one. Now we're talking about Rabban Gamliel Azakein, who lived some 70, 50 years before the destruction of the temple, Hillel's grandson. So he instituted that they could travel their 2,000 amma as though they were part of the city. They could travel 2,000 amma in each direction.
Outside. Outside the city.
Okay. Outside. Yeah, they're like the people of the city. They
what
could travel.
Originally,
four amot within the courtyard. Come on.
The courtyard, which was the Hatzah.
Man.
But I thought the city was considered the
form. That's for the people who live in the city. But the people who came from out of the city and they came to Beit Yazik, they're stuck with Dal Damot. Now the courtyard is considered like their Dal Damot. They could walk the whole courtyard, but not more than that. Yeah. If it's beyond his 2,000, I think so. Instituted that they could walk 2,000 amas in each direction. And not only these are allowed to walk their 2,000 amas, even a midwife who comes to deliver a child. So we say, even though she's out of her range, she can travel. Vabalatzin min adleka, or someone who came to save people from a fire. Uminagais, or to save them from a group of soldiers that are coming. He comes to tell them, close the doors to the city, be prepared, there's a group of soldiers headed this way. So he traveled to save their lives on Shabbos. Chazal said, we'll give him the 2,000 amas. Uminanahar, or he comes to tell him, the river's overflowing, guys, run for your life. So he came to save the city. We say he has 2,000 amas. Uminama polet, or he tells them there's an avalanche headed this way. Chazal say he has 2,000 amas. They're like the people of the city. And they're allowed to travel 2,000 amas in each direction outside the city. They have the whole city is like the amas.
Specifically these cases, or if it's like a guy had to do it. Like these are examples for...
So I don't know. We have to check in the halacha. But if it were just situations where they came to save, we'd have to wonder why the Mishnah enumerated them. Logic would dictate it should be anyone that comes to save. But for some reason, the Mishnah gave us the details. We have to check. I don't know. Ketzad bodekin et ha'edin. How do we check the witnesses? Ketzad means what? Ke'ezet tzad. Ketzad is a shortening of ke'ezet tzad, meaning the Mishnah had at least two ways that the Mishnah contemplated, and the Mishnah means which way. How do we check the witnesses? Zug shabarishon, the first pair that comes. Zug is a pair, right? That's why scissors are called zug, because they're a pair of knives. So zug is a pair. Zug shebarishon, the first pair that comes, bodekin oto rishon, we check them first. First come, first serve. They came first, we check them first. Umachnisin tagadol shebein, we bring in the one who's bigger among the two, meaning if Rav Bigon would come with one of the guys, Machon Meir, they'd interview Rav Bigon first. He's the bigger one. So
of course, that's, not the size.
That's what it seems. So the Mishnah doesn't say, I assume it means chashivut. But maybe it means age. I don't know. They ask him like this. When they tell the witness, Emo, tell us. Ketzad reite talavana. How do you see the moon? Lifnei achama o lachar achama. Before the moon, the sun or after the sun. You remember, we said, the half a ball that you see, the slither that you see of the moon, that little banana, is always the side that's facing the moon. So in the beginning of the month, it's going to be the western side of the moon, because we always see it after sunset. As we discussed yesterday, you have sunset, and then this slither of the moon. And then the second half of the month, where it's corresponding to the sun over here, it's coming up, you have Shkia, and then afterwards the moon, and then Zricha. So, you remember what we discussed. So it's always going to be the eastern slither that's facing the sun, which is going to rise in the east. Right? Okay, so they ask him, how'd you see it? Which side is he supposed to tell us? The western side or the eastern side?
The western.
The western side, the side that's facing the sunset. He's supposed to see it in the west, on the bottom. So again, what did the Mishnah tell us? How do we check the witnesses? We interview them as follows. We tell them, tell us, Ketzad ra'it et alvana, how do you see the moon? Lifnei hachama or la'achar hachama? Did you see it facing the sun or not facing the sun? Now, we know that which side, lifnei, is like el pinei. Le pinei hachama, was it facing the sun? Where was the dark side of the moon? Where was the light side of the moon? Where did you see the moon facing? So we know that the light side of the moon, if it, we're assuming you have sunset, and then you see a slither of the moon, and then that sets. So the amount, the part of the moon that you should see is the side that's facing the sun.
Right.
Or was it facing the other way? Its back was to the moon. Its back was to the sun. If he said its back was to the sun, we know he doesn't know what he's talking about. He saw some light in the sky that wasn't the moon. Litzpona or Liduma, do you see it to the north or did you see it to the south? Because depending on the season, they know where the moon should have been. Chazal knew exactly whether it should have been visible or not, whether it should have been to the north or to the south, how big. Kama yakavoa, how high was it? You remember we said, depending on when during the previous 24 hours was the molad, when the sun passed the moon, if the sun passed the moon a second earlier, chances are you won't be able to see it. If the sun passed the moon 23 hours earlier, that means it's had 23 hours to get ahead of the moon. That means that you're going to have 35 minutes after sunset where you'll be able to see the moon, meaning that new moon is going to be pretty high in the horizon, relatively. So, they asked him how high was the moon, and they knew mathematically exactly what the right answer was. So they'd ask him, was it one palm tree high? Was it two palm trees high? They'd evaluate with what they had today. Today we speak in stories. In their day, they'd speak in the heights of palm trees, stuff like that. And when you look at the curve, where was it slanted? And how wide was it? And they knew the right answer. Chazal were listening to hear, is he telling them the truth? They knew what he should have seen. If he said it was facing the moon, meaning it's slant, the sunny side of the moon was facing the moon, the Gemara assumes is like, if we look at the banana, the top part of the banana has a face, right? Let's say it has a face. So when the Gemara says lipnei achama, it's what we would call the dark side is to the sun. It's as though it's facing the moon. It's like a person slanted over in Shmona Esrei, right? That's the moon. So where is he facing? So if he's saying I'm facing the sun, it means the dark side of the moon is towards the sun. Then we know he's not. He didn't see the moon. Whatever he saw wasn't the moon. If he said it was facing the sun, he didn't say anything. It's the same. Lipnei chama and lachar chama means if his back is to the moon, then he's facing Shmona Esrei the other way. His back is to the moon. We look at the moon as though it's a man curved in Shmona Esrei. So his back is to the sun. That's the way we want it to be. His face is to the sun. Then that's not it.
So what happens if the witnesses, for whatever reason, they give us stuff, they don't answer correctly?
We don't accept them.
Right, but we just hope there's going to be no other witnesses.
We hope so, yeah.
And if there's not?
That we could discuss Thursday night. How much we use the mathematical equation. Yeah.
Is it required to answer all the questions? Or let's say if it gets... So, I don't know, I forgot this, or I don't know this.
I don't know. It's a good question, I don't know. V'achar kach hayu machnisin tashini uvodkin oto, and after they finished questioning one, they'd bring in the second witness and ask him, im nimtzu divrei mechuvanim, if they found that their testimony matched, edutan kayemet, and we accept their testimony. U'shal kol azugot, and the rest of the pairs, shalin otam rashei dvarim, we asked them just general things, the beginning. We ask him, okay, where did you see the moon? How high was it? What shape was it? We ask him just a little bit. Not that we needed them. Once we accepted one pair, we'll sanctify the new month. We don't need the other witnesses. So they shouldn't go out all disappointed. You slept all the way from Tzfat to Yerushalayim. You rode quickly on your horse. You traversed the hills and the valleys. Finally, you get to Yerushalayim, and they tell you, Rav Eliashiv won't see you today. He already got the testimony. So they say, wait a second, what did I do this for? So next time you'll be less inclined to put yourself out to come testify. So they said, no, we'll let you see Rabbi Yashiv. Rabbi Yashiv sits you down, the chief rabbi sits you down, starts asking you a bunch of questions, and he says, Yishkoyach, thank you very, very much for coming. We really appreciate it. Go have something to eat outside. And you go back home and you tell your family, you know who I saw? I saw Rabbi Gamliel. I saw the Nasi. So then you'll come again next time. So lo shutzichin lehen. They didn't need the testimony of the other witnesses. They shouldn't go out feeling all disappointed.
So
Pach nafesh is a term. It means to feel let down. Bishvil shiyur gilim lavo, so that they'll be accustomed to come. And once we accept their testimony, Rosh Beit Din Omer Mekudash, the head of the Beis Din said, we sanctify the month, V'chol Am Onim Nachav Mekudash Mekudash. And everyone would repeat, would reply to him, it is sanctified, it is sanctified. Mishaya Nocheh, whoever was present at the time of Kiddush HaChodesh. Ben Shin Revi Zmano, Ben Sheloni Revi Zmano, Mekachinoto. Regardless if it's the new moon is on the 30th or on the 31st, if it's a full month or not a full month, we sanctify the month. Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzadok Omer, he said, "Im lo nireh bizmano, en mekachinoto." If it shows up on the 31st, we don't need to sanctify it. Shekvar kitshu shamayim, because in heavens they already sanctified it. And this is a machlokas in drashos from the psukim. Let's quickly review what we saw today.
What's the kavanah? I didn't understand the last point here.
Do Beis Din have to declare that the new month is mekudash? If the new month is a longer month, a month of that is on the 31st day is the new moon, so Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzadok says, we treat it as though in heavens they already sanctified the month once it was 30 days. And now what do Beis Din have to say? Meaning, what's the chiddush of Beis Din? Can't make it a month of 32 days. Once day 30 was not Aleph, once we made it a month of 30, so by default, tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh, the first of the next month.
So when we have 31st and 1st.
Well, you don't have 31st in a Jewish calendar. You have either 29 and 1st or 30th and 1st. The question is it's day 30, day 1, or is it day 30? Is there going to be a month of 30, or is it going to be a month of 29?
Right,
well, if it be, there's no 31. So if it was a month of 30, so by default, tomorrow is 1. So what do I need the courts for anymore? So the court sanctification is no longer as important. Now he does it based on drashot. Yeah. Yeah? Fine. Okay, so let's quickly review what we saw today. We saw that a father and a son, we're going back to the first chapter, the seventh Mishnah, a father and son who saw the new moon should go because maybe they'll combine with someone else. Rabbi Shimon says we'd accept them, and then we have the story of Tuvia Rofe, who they accepted him and his servant, but not him and his son. We said who's disqualified from testifying about the new month? Someone who gambles, someone who gives loans with Ribis Drabanan, someone who does business with Shemitah Drabanan, and slaves, and then we said a rule that slaves could testify whatever a woman could testify for. Whoever saw the new moon and has trouble going, we take him by horse, by bed, we take sticks if we need to, we take food if we need to, so long as we can get there within 24 hours, we go, even with all these preparations on Shabbat. Perek Bet, the first Mishnah, we said if they don't know him, then they'd send people with him because of the problem of the Minim. Initially, they used to light these torches and wave them from mountain to mountain. Once we had the problem of the Kutim, we'd have to do it through messengers. Mishnah Hey tells us about the great courtyard where they'd all gather, and then they couldn't walk beyond that courtyard. And then Rav Gamliel instituted that they could travel, so they no longer need this yard. The yard was built so that within that yard they could at least move more than 4 footsteps. Rav Gamliel instituted that they could travel like the people of the city, and the same thing is for anyone who comes for an emergency situation. A midwife, someone who comes to save from a fire, from a battalion, from the overflooding river, from an avalanche, they could travel like the people of the city. How do we question the witnesses? We take the bigger one first and we ask him, how'd you see it? Which way was the moon facing? Was it to the north or south? How high was it? Where was it tilting? How wide was it? And if we accept, if what he said is good, we interview the second one. If what they said stands, then we sanctify the month. We're Mekadesh the Chodesh. The rest of the witnesses, we give them a shorter interview just so they should feel like they did something. Once we accept their testimony, the head of the Beis Din says, Mekudash, we sanctify the month, and everyone replies after him, Mekudash, Mekudash. Tanakama holds, we do this procession, whether the previous month had 30 days or 29 days, whether Rosh Chodesh falls out after 29 days or after 30 days. And Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzadok says, if Rosh Chodesh fell after 30 days, then you don't really need the courts anymore, because by default, the Rosh Chodesh would have been then, and you don't need the courts to declare Mekudash that the Rosh Chodesh is sanctified.
What do we have to say Mekudash, Mekudash?
It's we dashen it from the Psukim.
Whereas he says Mekudash and we respond doubtful.
Correct. Because it says Moadei Hashem Shel Tikre'u Otam, we dashen Tikre'u Atem. You, Moshe and Aaron, like the Betin, will declare the holiness of the month.